Welcome to the Mediate.com podcast with Veronica Kramer.
Well, hey there, everyone, and thanks for joining me for another great episode of the Mediate.com podcast. And today I am so excited to welcome back Lucia Cantor St. Amour, and I am going to title this episode For the Forces of Good with Lucia. And if you recall, Lucia was previously a guest on the Mediate.com podcast where she talked about things like cognitive traps, the myth of rationality. If you haven't checked out that episode, you definitely should, and I will drop a link in the show notes to that. So again, I'm super thrilled to have her back on the show where we're going to talk about things like impartiality versus neutrality. We're going to talk about negotiating with bullies, impasse, much, much more. And by way of background, as a refresher, Lucia is a member of the Neuroleadership Institute. She has specific training in behavioral science and how real people act in real conflict situations and decision making. She is the founder and principal of her firm, Pactum Factum, which specializes in negotiation and dispute resolution, and a Mediate.com certified online mediator. A vice president for UN Women, Lucia has also been practicing law since 1998. 10 years of her practice included regular clinical teaching positions in mediation and negotiation at UC Hastings and UC Berkeley Law. She has also been a visiting lecturer at many prominent law and business universities in the US and Europe, and served for a number of years as an annual competition judge and mediator for the International Chamber of Commerce in Paris, France. Just this year, she launched her own podcast, The Superpower of Everyday Negotiation, a fantastic podcast, by the way, so check that out if you haven't already. And I also want to add her book, titled For the Forces of Good, The Superpower of Everyday Negotiation, has been praised by none other than Robert Cialdini, among many, many others. And it releases to the public on October 1st, 2022. So if you're hearing this now, her book is out there in the world. And I want to add, I was part of Lucia's list of insiders who was able to receive an advanced copy of the book. I've read it. It's a fantastic book. Lucia, it is smart, it is fun, it is accessible. So I'm so excited to have you on the show. Lucia, welcome back to the Mediate.com podcast, and thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for having me back, Veronica. That I'm glad I cooperated enough the first time for you to have me back. And only people, as you know, only people who did not peak in high school got to be part of the insiders group for the early release of my book, which I tried to make, again, as you said, accessible and inclusive, because something I noticed about the negotiation books in the marketplace was that they were kind of elitist and kind of exclusive to this sort of C-suite crowd and attorneys and MBAs and extremely, and I mean extraordinarily male dominated in terms of authorship. So I thought, can I do something about that? And I did. So happy to be here.
Yeah. And kudos to you for noticing that gap that needed to be filled and then taking it upon yourself to fill that gap, right? I mean, you know, like I mentioned already, it's fun, it's accessible, it's so well written. I mean, I can tell that you were a professor for, what was it, about 10 years? The writing is so crisp. And I think that, you know, whether someone is new to negotiation or, you know, listeners of the show who are experienced in helping others negotiate, I mean, there are such great takeaways for everyone that I'm so excited and thrilled for you about this book.
Well, and I designed it that way intentionally. So the idea, I think, these days is if you're going to write a book, you need to write it for the non-reader. You need to write a book for the social media scroller with a short attention span. And ideally, that same book is designed for the deep sea diver, right? The comparative literature geek. And so if you are either one of those categories, you're going to get something from this book. And if you consider yourself a negotiation or mediation expert, you're going to get something from this book, some nuggets that you did not know before or haven't thought about before. And if you're a complete novice, well, then you just hit pay dirt, baby. So, and it's, again, it is really fun. You've got to make it fun and tell stories. So that's what I tried to do. I tried to make it fun and accessible and inclusive. And I've even heard from a few men, one in Singapore, one in India, one in Nigeria, who wrote to me and said, Lucia, I'm so excited to get your book because I have spent my career in workshops where white men are telling you how to get things done. And so what I'm really hearing is that we just need more diversity and inclusiveness on the topic of negotiation and even mediation, for that matter. And I can do something about the E and the I of DEI. I can't do much about the D because I'm still white, but it's a start. And we need more. We need more voices. Diversity, just like in an ecosystem, truly does make us stronger.
Oh, absolutely. And so, you know, what I thought we would do today, what I thought would be fun is if we pulled out some of the topics that you talked about in your book and maybe just chatted about them a little bit more in depth. And so, you know, I think I pulled out maybe four or five different topics. And I thought one that would be really interesting to start with is just this idea of impartiality versus neutrality that you talked about in your book. And so when I was reading that part, you know, I was reflecting back on my basic mediation training. And one of the things I learned, whether it was my basic mediation training or subsequent trainings or just in conversations with mediators, is, you know, I don't know how many times I've heard mediation described as, you know, an organized problem solving process guided by a neutral third party called a mediator. And then I've also heard about impartiality. And sometimes, you know, I would hear folks kind of almost conflate the two ideas. And so I noticed in your book, that was one thing that you really drew this distinction between impartiality and neutrality. And so can you start us off with just talking a little bit about that distinction? And why it's important.
I sure can. And I'm going to back up for just a moment. So you're referring to chapter 14, where I do finally get to mediation, the mediation process. Now let's remember that lay people, you know, people don't know what mediation is. And they actually confuse it with arbitration, or they use arbitration and mediation interchangeably. They think they're the same thing when in fact they are extremely different. And so that's one of the reasons I wanted to include mediation in a book about negotiation, so that I could talk about, here's what it is, here's how it can help you. And I only get to it in chapter 14 because that's, I'm sort of building up the toolkit, right? And it's chapter 14 out of a total of 18 chapters, because that's the part where I say, okay, so you're at impasse. And the first bit of that chapter is, well, are you really at impasse? Are you really? Because there's sort of hitting a rough spot, and then there's impasse, and they're not the same thing. So I distinguish between those as well. You know, did your car break down on the side of the road? It just needs a tire change, and you can do that yourself. You know, you just need to take a moment and fix it. Or is your car stuck in the mud? And the only way you're going to get it out is by calling in reinforcements. And that's the mediator. So this idea of impartiality and neutrality, and some people may think I'm splitting hairs on that or just wordsmithing, I'm really not. And I think this is the example I even gave in the book, where I say, look, mediators are not neutral. A Bugatti racing car in neutral can perform none of its power. And a mediator is always in action, right? Even when we're quote unquote just listening, which is an incredibly dynamic thing to be doing, and that's chapter 5, as you know, we are in action. And so we're never in neutral, I would argue. We are impartial, but we are never neutral. So what I love about that chapter 14 is it first breaks down the what impasse really means. And I remind the reader of all these tools I've given them so far. Well, have you tried this? Have you tried this? Have you tried this? You can't just read this book. You have to actually practice the lessons. It's no different than sitting on the sofa and watching the workout video. No, you actually have to perform the plank twists to get the six-pack abs, right? Have you tried all these things that I've suggested? Okay, maybe you really are at impasse. Now let's talk about what a mediator can do for you. And then people might say, well, what's the difference? We've already tried to work it out on our own and we haven't been able to. What difference would a mediator make? A mediator can make a huge difference. Yes, you've tried to work it out on your own, but working with a mediator is very, very different. So I do go into that in chapter 14, and hopefully it's a bit of an education for people about mediation and how it can help.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I like that imagery of a race car, right? That if it's in neutral, it's not doing anything, because, I mean, you're right. People don't want, and one of the other guests I had on an early episode talked about, people don't want a passive mediator. They want a mediator who is in action, who is doing the work to help bring people close together. So yeah, that makes total sense.
It does. And the bottom line is that's what makes us kind of secret agents, is we're always in gear. And I know that there have been times, I wouldn't be able to tell you how many negotiations and mediations I've done over my 25 plus year career, Veronica. I just know that there have been times when the parties are walking out of a mediation and they've got a deal and they're thinking, wait, you know, the mediator didn't really seem to do anything. And that's what I sort of feel like, yes, I did my job, right? I was in gear, but it was kind of invisible to you.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about another topic you discussed. And this one was in chapter 15. And I thought this was interesting. You talked about negotiating with bullies. And I have to say, I've read a lot of books in dealing with negotiation, mediation, organizational change and whatnot. But yours is the first book that I've come across that talks about negotiating with bullies. You know, I think about just sort of applying that to mediators. I mean, how many times do we as mediators see bullying-like behavior in a mediation? You might see one party blaming the other. You might see a party interrupting. If you're doing an in-person mediation, you might see those kind of more aggressive body language and whatnot. So, you know, what is it that you can tell us about negotiating with bullies? And I mean, can people negotiate with bullies in mediation?
Right. It's a terribly important topic, because we hear an awful lot about bullying vis-a-vis children, not enough about adult bullying, which is quite widespread. And chapter 15 is the chapter where, when I did send out early drafts for people to consider it for an endorsement, that's the chapter where I would get an email from someone and they'd say, Lucia, I just finished the manuscript. I really need to talk to you about chapter 15. And every time that happened, it happened about half a dozen times, I thought, oh, they don't like it. Oh, they're going to say I can't include that, that it's too raw, that it's too, it doesn't belong in the book. And every time I was wrong, every time it was someone, an adult, who was saying, this chapter is so powerful. And they then would share with me what I'm calling their my bully story with me, that they had their own bullying story that they hadn't talked about, because there's shame associated with it. There's this idea of I've done something wrong to deserve it that's associated with it. And they've maybe talked to a partner or a spouse and a therapist about it. And that's about it. Otherwise, it's an extremely lonely feeling. And you're right that it's not covered in other negotiation books. It is one of the aspects that, when I was first telling Bob Cialdini about my manuscript, that got his attention. So let me also say one more thing about how I do incorporate mediation into this chapter, as well as 14. Mediation and the use of even mediator language is sprinkled throughout the book, because what I kind of am telling people is, you know, look, there are mediators out there to help you, and you too can use some of these mediator tricks and language in your own negotiation. You don't have to be a mediator to do it. Now, I'm going to answer your question, which was, can you negotiate with bullies? And in the book, right up front in the chapter, what I say is, I am not convinced that you can. Well, okay, so why am I even here? Why are we doing this, right? I say that, and then I add, at least not alone. And that's what I think it really boils down to, is that you can't negotiate with bullies alone. And I also want to quickly add that I do not relish labeling anyone as a bully. I think it is dehumanizing. I think it is reductive. At a certain point, though, once someone has engaged in a pattern of behavior over time, then the shoe fits. And that is what you're dealing with. And so I do go through various steps, if you will, or pointers, strategies in chapter 15 about negotiating with bullies. And among them are, it's a lot of what Bill Eddy, right? His many mediators listening to this probably have heard of Bill Eddy and his BIF strategy, which is brief, informative, firm, and friendly. And I don't necessarily name the BIF strategy in here, but the reality of bullies is that they win. They succeed. A lot of the Silicon Valley multi-bajillionaires just down the road, just down the 680 freeway from me here in California, they fit the classic bully description. They are successful. One thing you can do is ignore them. And a behaviorist will tell you that ignoring undesirable behavior is actually the most effective and fastest way to extinguish that behavior, because even negative attention is still attention. Even negative attention means they've drawn you in. So my first piece of advice is try ignoring them. Another piece of advice is try building rapport. They're not expecting you to build rapport with them. They're expecting you to be intimidated by them. And so building rapport can really kind of throw them off their own game, right? And that actually can work, not all the time. And none of this is foolproof. One piece of advice that Bill Eddy also agrees with is avoid giving in. If you give in to a bully, they will just keep taking from you. It's not like you go, okay, I'm just going to give in and then they'll go away. That's not what happens, actually. You've just reinforced the behavior. And so they've just learned, oh, I can keep bullying this person. So you need to try as best you can to avoid giving in. Appear calm and patient. Notice that I didn't say be calm and patient. That's because sometimes you got to fake it to make it, right? Even if you don't actually feel calm and patient, if you can appear calm and patient, bullies are often in a hurry. They like to get what they want quickly. And that can also throw them off their game. You also need to know your bottom line, your reservation point, which I talk about in chapter 3 early on in the book. What is your limit line so that you know you won't go beyond it? Ultimately, though, I come down to these last two final points. And one is bring in a neutral third party if you need to. And that's where the mediator comes in. Now, why is that so effective, or can it be? Well, the bully doesn't want you to do that, because the bully won't be able to intimidate that third party. And the bully, where they have their dominance and their control, is by keeping you scared, keeping you intimidated. The mediator won't feel that intimidation. Number two, the bully likes to play by their own rules and keep people beholden to their random rules. But when they come into any kind of tribunal, like a mediation or an arbitration, well, now they've got to play by those rules and they don't want to. So a bully might be reluctant to involve a mediator for those reasons. Now, I said there were two things that it boils down to, and that was the first, bringing in a neutral. The second thing is allyship. You have got to have allies. Remember I said, I don't think you can negotiate with bullies, at least not alone. Figure out who your allies are. Do you even have allies? Do you think you have allies, but they're not really allies? They're quiet allies behind the scenes where they're saying, oh, this is so terrible. Veronica, this is so terrible what's happening. You hang in there. But they're not standing up next to you. They're not standing up in front of you. They're not speaking out visibly and audibly for you. And you need to find out, do you have allies, and are they out loud living allies, or are they quiet behind the scenes allies? Because you need the first category of allies. So that was a lot. Is that helpful?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you know, what I just kept thinking as you were sharing all that too, is just how happy I am that you wrote that chapter, because you know, I know just from kind of researching the topic a little bit, I mean, there's an organization that put out a 2021 survey on, for example, you know, workplace bullying. And this organization, they said something like that bullying had impacted like about 30% of people in the workplace, which that's a really large number.
That's so, a I mean, high this statistic.
Is, yep, it is. I mean, this is one of those topics that, yeah, it's not comfortable to talk about. It's not easy to talk about.
It's impacted a lot of people. And remember what I said earlier, it's complicated because when you're the subject of bullying, it messes with your head and your heart. You actually feel like I somehow brought this on. I somehow caused this. And that's part of the dynamic. It's kind of a dynamic of abuse, right? Where you think, oh, I've done something to cause this. And so then you feel like, well, I have to fix it, or I have to make myself smaller. I just have to cooperate, or I just have to be good, right? And there are also different kinds of bullies. There's the bully that everyone sees and is going, oh, this is so terrible. It's so terrible. You hang in there. There's a bully that no one sees but you. And it's the sort of the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde bully, where it's all done behind the scenes. And so you have no witnesses to that bully. And that can be especially tricky to manage. So that's a high statistic. And it means that we need more help in this area. And mediators, all of you mediators listening to this, you are equipped to help.
Yeah. And another thought I had too, with just, you know, the information that you're sharing and the tips for how people can interact with a bully, particularly in a mediation, is just, you know, the plug for preparation. I mean, I know you talk a lot in your book, especially at the beginning, about just the importance of preparing for these types of conversations before, or preparing for a negotiation before you have it. This looks like, you know, another area where preparation is especially important.
Preparation is important. And it also, it's for mediators out there, you need to be cautious and mindful of, do I do a joint session at all? Do I do a short joint session and then I immediately split them into caucus? Like, you may need to be doing mostly caucus for that type of mediation once you spot that issue. And it may not be brought to your attention in advance of the mediation. One of the parties might not name it. You may have to observe the bullying on your own and then quickly adjust your strategy. Oh, I better do more caucusing here. If you don't think that you're going to be able to, I don't know, educate the bully, you know, in the joint session, which is pretty tough to do.
Yeah, yeah. And so kind of to continue a little bit further, and this is something that, you know, I imagine would come into play not only if one of the parties in a mediation is a bully, but also when bullying is not the case, is just storytelling. Yeah. So, you know, I had, before reading your book, I had gotten used to the phrase of two sides to every story.
Oh, we hear it all the time.
Yeah, you hear that all the time. But then I, you know, in reading your book, I think the quote it was that you shared was not two sides to a story, but two different stories. So yeah. Tell me about that. How can mediators help parties when there are two different stories, not just two sides to a story?
Right. I think there's almost always, by the way, I warn against words like always and never in chapter 9, which is it's the chapter on language and our use of language and how much fighting language we tend to use just in everyday conversation. But I have, my mediation background dates back to 1996. So yeah, I'm like 100 years old. And I have, as far back as I can remember, because of a mentor of mine in mediation who said that to me, there aren't two sides to a story, there are two different stories. And then I found out just in 2020, when I was going through the online mediators training for mediate.com, that Jim Melamed, founder of mediate.com, he also says that. So I'm not the only one who says that. So one of the things, and I write about this in chapter 15 with the bullying, is because I do even reveal some bullying stories from my own life. And one of the things I say in there, and I follow up on it in a later chapter, I think 16 or 17, is where I say, you know, look, I'm the hero of my story and my bullying story, where I was wronged. I was this champion of DEI and I got group bullied for it, right? And ousted from a president and CEO position in an organization. They're the hero of their story. I was the one who came in and I disrupted the status quo and didn't want any of these changes. And who does she think she is? She doesn't know us. She's not one of us. They're the hero of their story. It is a completely different story that you would hear from them. And I am at least aware enough to understand that. And I understood it while it was happening, which is why I hung in there for so long. I thought, I'm a mediator. I understand I'm disrupting the status quo. I understand that feels threatening. I understand that they have a different story than I am. This is productive disruption. I'm going to get to the other side of this, and it's going to be this new era of understanding and progress. And I was outnumbered. So I could never quite get ahead of it. I was alone and they were a group. Their story, if they were to write it, is completely different from mine. So no, not two sides of the same story, two different stories. And as a mediator, maybe that can provide, if you could even just name that in a mediation, maybe it provides a little bit of relief. Like, we don't actually have to agree on the story. We can have different facts. You know, Neil deGrasse Tyson talks about three different categories of facts. And I cover that in one of the chapters as well. I think chapter 16, personal facts, political facts, and objective facts. And people just aren't going to necessarily agree about their personal facts, and you don't have to. And that's also the power of empathy. And empathy, or some form of that word, appears, I believe, 38 times in the book, where you can show empathy. And one of the most powerful things about it in a negotiation is that it doesn't mean agreeing with the other side. So maybe that's a load or a pressure that the mediator can take off the parties by saying, it's okay. You don't have to come together and agree on the same story. Let's work with the facts as they exist to you. And then you can, as a mediator, validate those personal facts, because that's their story and those are their facts.
Oh yeah. And, you know, as I reflect back on, you know, the 7 years that I mediated different types of disputes, civil disputes, I mean, that's where it was much easier for me to do that in caucus versus joint session.
Right.
Right. Like, it was really hard to relate to those two different stories in a meaningful way in joint session. But that's correct. Why I used to love caucus, because that's where you could do that and try to make that shift from, you know, talking about the problem to talking about potential solutions.
Well, and that's one of the ways that when people say, well, what's the difference bringing in a mediator? We've already tried to work it out on our own. Well, but you haven't listened to each other in the way that a mediator will listen to you, in a way that in a private caucus, that a mediator, the way I describe it, is will listen to you like you have never been listened to before. And that is cathartic. And mediation isn't necessarily therapy. We're not therapists. I mean, some of us might be. I'm an attorney. I'm not a therapist. It can be therapeutic in that way, because I can practically guarantee you the parties on their own have not been listening to each other at that level, expressing that kind of empathy, reflecting back and validating in that way. So when you actually have someone in front of you who is paying attention to you like you haven't been paid attention to before, it is so disarming, and it can get you moving forward. Like, thank you. You see me. And that's often a big part of the hangup, is that you just haven't been seen. You just haven't been heard.
Oh yeah. And how many times, you know, you think of when people are in a dispute, one of the things I used to tell folks, I used to mediate with a lot of unrepresented parties. So you talked about at the beginning, you know, the confusion between mediation and arbitration and whatnot. And I would spend time talking about what to expect. And it is very difficult, I've observed, for two parties who wholeheartedly disagree with each other to sit in the same room and not react to what the other person is saying, right? To sit there and try to show appreciation for the other party's perspective and to listen, to understand. No, what I observed is people are listening to respond, right? And what you've talked about, listening to understand, what we do as mediators is entirely different. And there's work in that skill. There's work in that.
And that's part of that impartiality versus neutrality. We don't mm-hmm. look like we're quote unquote doing anything. Boy, are we doing a lot. Boy, are we in gear when we are listening to someone like they have never been listened to before.
Oh yeah. I think back to the mediations that I did. I mean, at the end of a 2-hour session, I was wiped out. I was wiped out and ready for a break, right? Because that does take a lot of mental energy. Absolutely. Well, so another thing I want to talk about too is, and I might mispronounce this word because I just asked you how to say it right before we hit record, but you talked about, is it interoception?
That's
spidey
right,
sense
it.
In negotiation. I got
you
it. All right.
Nailed it. Yes. Interoception, the spidey sense.
Mm-hmm. So how does a mediator pay attention to that as well as to the parties?
Right. So this was, I reference a interview that Ezra Klein did with Annie Murphy Paul on her book, where she really goes into detail about interoception. And I'm kind of calling it spidey sense, because that's what I pulled from it is, oh, it's when your spidey senses are tingling. And the reason the book is ordered as it is because it's building, right? It's like a layer cake. So if you're reading the book and you're sort of at chapter 3, and I'm kind of talking about BATNA and brainstorming and reservation point, and you're like, yeah, I already know all this. Keep reading. I'm just getting warmed up. Because chapter 3 comes before chapter 4 for a reason. Chapter 3 is planning. Chapter 4 is, okay, now you got your plan, which since you've got that as an anchor, it frees you up to listen to your interoception, which is the information your body is feeding you in the moment. And one of the things I say at the beginning of the chapter, I'm going to pause right there and just say that there's a later chapter on negotiating when you have no plan. I think that's chapter 7. But right now we're at chapter 4, which is interoception. You've got your plan and now you can pay attention to your body. And we have all these buzzwords we hear about how, oh, you need to get out of your comfort zone in order to have a growth mindset and do something that scares you every day, conquer your fear. And I think that can confuse people into thinking like, oh, I should just disregard that as fear. Go away, fear. I'm not going to listen to you. No, hold on. Just time the field for a second. Don't be so quick to dismiss the messages that your body is sending you. It is no different than any other information. It is information. And the reason you're maybe able to notice it is because you did do your planning, right? And you've got it. You can use your plan. And now your body's going, oh, hold on. Something's not right here. Or hold on. You might need to check that, what that person just said. And you can't quite put your finger on it. You maybe can't articulate it. And I give an example in the book of how I noticed this in myself in my old legal career, where my body would remember a person, an opposing counsel, when my mind did not. My body was reacting to the person. I would go, oh, why am I having that reaction to that person? Then I would go back and look in my notes and look up that person. I go, oh, that's why, because of last time, whatever it was, 3 years ago when they were here, my body remembered. So it's about you, not just as a party in a negotiation, but as a mediator, staying really alert to some of the signals you might be getting from parties. Now, you can't be inside their body to pick up the signals. You can be inside your own body to pick up the signals. Like, that doesn't seem right to me. My body is maybe a piece of information or something a party just said, like, that doesn't feel right. Well, pay attention to that. Dig a little deeper. Ask maybe some more questions about that. Find out more. Don't just go, oh, that's just me being nervous again. And it's also staying cued into the parties in terms of they're breathing, they're gesturing. This is why building rapport is also so useful. It's not just a nice thing. I talk about this in chapter 2. Building rapport and taking that time maybe in the general session at first is where you have maybe an ice-breaking exercise or something, but you spend a little time together. You're kind of getting a baseline read of the parties. What's their speaking style? Do they gesture a lot? What's their breathing like? What are they like in a more or less relaxed state? They're not completely relaxed. They're in a conflict. But And then when you notice changes from that baseline, that is information. And it's your job to decode it.
Oh, yeah, that makes total sense. And, you know, as you were sharing that, I was just reflecting back on my own mediations. And, you know, one scenario where I, as a mediator, kind of had this spidey sense where my body would have this reaction is there were always situations where I felt that, you know, we would spend maybe a 2-3 hour session, parties would negotiate the terms of this agreement, and then it was time for me to actually draft the written agreement that both sides were going to sign. And inevitably, someone wanted to rush that. And that's where I would kind of get, like, my body would react to, well, okay, we just spent 2-3 hours talking about this. If, you know, this feels funny now to try to rush the drafting process. Like,
right.
That was.
Yeah. Boy, I'm so glad you said that piece, Veronica. This is really important. And in fact, it's one of my everyday super tip text boxes, which, as you know, I have a bunch of, in addition to art throughout the book, my own original art, most of it at fifth grade level, is I have these everyday super tip text boxes that are sort of meant to be kind of sticky for you, right? And that's one of them. Or I say, if the other side is applying pressure, like they need an answer now, or they're rushing you, that's a flag. There's something going on there. And in fact, what you probably just learned is that they're in a rush for some reason. And you can even flip that narrative by actually slowing down even more. And it could be a power play. Ditto for being confused. If you find that you're, and as a mediator too, I'm saying this, if you find that you are confused, there are a lot of numbers going back and forth. It's confusing, right? This happens to mediators. It's probably not because you're a dummy. It's probably because it's confusing. So don't stay confused. It might even be a tactic to confuse you so that you'll kind of gloss over something and you won't dig in. Well, they're underestimating you because you're a mediator. That's what you do. You dig in, because part of our job is to figure out how are all the ways this deal could fall apart in 6 months or a year or in, gosh, a week from now. So you're not going to be rushed. If you're seeing that one party is trying to rush the other side, that's a flag for you to be aware of and to maybe slow it down and not fall for it. And as far as hastening through the written agreement, well, that's going to be the governing agreement. That's the contract. That is the only way in which mediation is binding, right? Is because you form a contract at the end of it. So you need to make sure that contract is durable and practical and has thought about all of the details, how, not just what's going to happen, but how it's going to happen, how it's going to play out in real life, and where the booby traps might be, where are the landmines that you need to think about up front. Urgency is really a type of scarcity effect. And we've mentioned Cialdini a couple of times already, and that's one of his top six that he mentions in terms of heuristics and influencers is scarcity effect. And it's used constantly as a sales tactic. It's the classic is the, you know, hurry now, this offer won't last. Hurry, rush now, supplies are limited. Scarcity effect is also used in this way, urgency of time. That's a flag. And mediators, it's your job to slow that down.
Well, good. So I feel reassured now, because what I used to always do in those situations is I would tell folks, okay, well, if we don't have time to write the agreement today, let's do a second session. When are you next available for it? So I feel
good. Because we're not going to rush this part.
Yep.
Not after all this work. Nope.
Oh,
we're
yeah.
not going to write a loosey-goosey contract. We're going to make sure we do this right.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Lucia, this has been so much fun. I mean, we could go on for hours talking about your book. We could, because we have before. tell everyone, where can they get the book? Where is it available?
Well, probably the easiest place to get it is on Amazon, and it's For the Forces of Good, The Superpower of Everyday Negotiation. It's got a fun, splashy cover of a a woman facing the other direction with a red cape, and she's got a to-go coffee in her right hand. She's got a dog leash in her left hand, and it wraps around the spine. And then on the back cover, there's a chocolate lab. And that's the whole idea. It's a superpower, but then the everyday aspect of it. This is an everyday skill. This is not some otherworldly skill. It's for everyone every day. You know, most negotiation books, when the agents, when I was pitching this to agents, they kept asking me, well, but Lucia, which section of the bookstore would it be in? Because it's not really business. So which, they were so confused, like, how do I sell this? Which section of the bookstore would it be in? And my answer was always the same. It wouldn't be in a section. It would be featured on the front table as you walked in. And okay, they actually didn't like that answer. They were not amused by it, but I meant it. Negotiation isn't just for business. It is everybody's business. And that is how the book is designed from front cover to back cover and all of the places in between. So happy reading. You can find it on Amazon, and an audiobook is coming. It's coming. It's in progress.
Very cool. And yeah, I love your title because, I mean, negotiation is every day, everywhere. I mean, we may not call it that, but that's what we're doing every day, multiple times a day in various aspects of our lives. So yeah, I love it.
It's for everyone.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I want to wrap up by sharing a fun story. So you recently ran a contest on LinkedIn.
Yes.
And
I posted a picture of my avatar, which was made by, it's an original avatar designed by Eliza Ruffle in the UK. And it's the final of 18 original pieces of art in the book. It's the last one at the very end. And I posted it on LinkedIn. And I said, dress for the job you want. It's a fabulous avatar. I said, what is the job of my avatar? And go ahead, tell the rest of the story.
Yeah. And so I took a chance, a swing at your contest, because the contest was whoever was the winner would get a free signed copy of your book. Right. So my entry was Empress of Empowerment, Listener of All, Speaker of Truth.
Yes.
And I put it out there and I was like, okay, there's no way this one's going to get selected. There's going to be like 10 more that are way more creative. And then what was it? Maybe about a week later, I got tagged in a post and I tied for first prize.
Yes,
so
you did.
I'm so excited.
And
to get
I was excited too, because I was not one of the judges. I recused myself. And part of the contest rules were, describe my avatar, but you have to know me to do this, and my avatar, and you need to like read my LinkedIn profile, go back through my posts, you know, it needs to be, you need to key into this, right? And then I made my brother and my husband be judges, and and there were more than 10 more entries, by the way. And I put them all on a document without any names associated with them. So they were anonymous. And Veronica, they really took it seriously. And the thing is, you didn't win because it was most creative. It wasn't the most creative one. There were others that were more creative. The reason they selected yours is they said, oh, Lucia, this is so accurate. It so describes you. And that's why they liked yours. And then the other one that won, the other one that won the entry was very creative. And they said, but that's not the reason it won either. It's they said it was such an apt description of my avatar. And so they were really struggling, which one? I said, well, we have a tie. It seems to me we have a tie. So I'm going to declare a tie and send the book to both people.
Yeah. And I'm so excited to get that copy. And I will say, I think what helped me tie for first prize was I tapped into my mediator skills, right? I tapped into those listening skills, understanding, and then that is what influenced, the entry. So
it's that mediator skill where you're saying to that person without so much as saying it, hey, I see you.
Yeah.
And that sure feels good.
Yeah. So yes, it was, as I mentioned to you on LinkedIn, I think this is the very first contest that I have won ever. You know, there was that art contest in fourth grade, but I think I got second place. So I think this is like the very first contest that I've won.
And
so I'm so
excited. I think I mentioned that the statute of limitations has run on that fourth grade contest. No. So you were overdue. So congratulations, Veronica.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And like I said, this was so much fun. How can others, you know, besides you've mentioned already how they can get your book, but how can they connect with you if they want to reach out and spark a conversation?
Oh, sure. You can email me at Lucia, L-U-C-I-A. It's Italian, just like Santa Lucia, that song. Lucia at pactumfactum.com. Pactum factum is Latin for a done deal. In case you don't know how to spell it, just type in a done deal, Latin. It's pactumfactum.com. And I also have a podcast. It's on Substack. It's on Apple Podcasts. And it's called Forces of Good, because there is a character limit. So I couldn't call it For the Forces of Good. So it's Forces of Good, the superpower of everyday negotiation. And it's 18 numbered episodes plus 3 what I call espresso shot episodes. So 21 episodes total.
Very nice. Well, hey, Lucia, thank you so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Veronica. I don't know. I think we had too much fun.
I know.
Might not be legal to have this much fun.
We'll have you come back for a third episode.
That sounds great. You know where to find me.
All right. Sounds good. All right, friends. Well, that wraps up another great episode of the Mediate.com podcast. We'll talk to you next time.
This podcast was brought to you by Mediate.com. For more information about Mediate.com's programs and content, please visit our website at www.mediate.com.